Page 123 of The Unfolding is the story of Olivia Lane.
I constantly felt like I had to prove my worth to people, to society, to my fans. And the fact that somebody already loved me and knew me and created me, that was almost too much for my brain to fathom.
God's story has been unfolding.
Since the beginning of time.
He invites you to be a part of it.
Another page in The Unfolding.
Hi, this is Meredith Foster. With about 400,000 followers on TikTok, it's fair to say Olivia Lane's story has attracted a lot of attention. She's been very open about the supernatural experience that convinced her, an atheist, that God is real. Today, she's using her gifts of singing, songwriting, and acting to share her story and encourage others to give Jesus a chance. But 4 years ago, Olivia would never have believed the story that has unfolded for her. As a teenager, she moved to Los Angeles to pursue a career in acting and then came a country music career. She was always burdened with an internal drive to prove herself, but no amount of success was enough to quiet the inner critic.
I grew up in Houston, Texas, and it was a wonderful childhood. The house I grew up in was just picturesque and dreamy, and I just loved all of my friends. And the community was pretty tight-knit. I would say I grew up in the suburbs. Kind of like everybody was on the same soccer teams, the same basketball teams. Everybody kind of went to the same churches. And that kind of describes me growing up in the church when I was really young. It was kind of somewhere that we would go on Sundays, somewhere to go on Wednesdays if my friends were going. And faith during that time in my life wasn't really talked about at home. And it wasn't really something that led my nuclear family life. I would categorize, I guess, myself as maybe like a Christmas and Easter kind of Christian at that time. And I think when I was really young, it was a place for me to just go hang out with friends. And, you know, as you get into high school, you're like, ooh, I'll go for the donuts and the fun music and the boys and woohoo. And it just never really took root that I could have a relationship with God. I would find myself going through these things like, you know, getting baptized when I was really young, which I don't really remember, but it wasn't my choice. Going through things like communion or confirmation and all these things that were a celebration, but I never really understood the point. So I would go have fun and then I would leave. So it kind of was just more of a hangout for me. So it's no surprise that a deep-rooted relationship with Jesus never really took root in my life because I didn't really understand. And now as I look back on my childhood, I wasn't discipled. And that's just a really, really cool thing that God's been doing in my life now. But fast forward, so about 16 years old, I would categorize myself as probably like a nerdy theater kid, big fish in a small pond vibe. And so my britches were very big and I begged my parents for 6 months to move to Los Angeles. I would go to the dinner table every night and I would beg my parents to move to LA. And I would always bring up a new case. Like one case was, well, Brittany's going off to college and I'm going to be the only child. And if I stay here and have to keep doing, you know, these commercials and these theater shows that are like, to me, in my eyes, they were very like small dice. I wanted to be, you know, in the big time. I wanted to be in LA. That's where everybody was going. Like all the kids on Disney Channel that I was seeing, making it all happen. Uh-huh. And I was like, I'm going to be so unhappy if I have to stay here. Of course, being a moody teenager at the time. And after 6 months, I mean, they took me seriously because I was serious. Every night I'd be like, so have you guys thought about it more? Have you thought about it more?
Were you asking your entire family to move?
Yes.
You were bold.
Listen, I look back on my 16-year-old self and I really don't know what I was thinking. It must have been God because moving at like 15, 16 in the middle of high school, who would do that? Like I have my friends, I have my family, I have my life. And I just wanted to leave it all behind to go chase my dreams.
Wow.
My mom was a stay-at-home mom, but she was also a singer as well. So that's sort of where I got the singing bug and the songwriting bug. She was always playing music throughout the house when I was growing up and really shepherded me as a musician. She saw this musical ability in me. And so she got me guitar lessons and vocal lessons and took me to the studio with her. So I got to be exposed on a small level to what that life would be like. And my dad, supported her and loved going out to watch her sing. So when they saw this in me, it wasn't a surprise, but they were very hesitant. But they wanted to make sure that I was serious about it because a 16-year-old, you know, we're teenagers, like, you know, like
right.
watching a 16-year-old try to make choices about their life. It's like, I don't know about that. But I was. And so we packed up. My mom went with me. And then my dad flew back and forth from Houston to L.A. And I did 2 years of high school out there and 4 years of college at the University of Southern California.
Whoa.
Which is a whole, I like to categorize my LA time as like the dark years because that's when I really let go of any sort of spirituality in my life.
How would you sum up, if you're just describing succinctly the difference between life in Houston, your life in Houston and your life in LA, how would you sum that up?
I would say that I was exponentially exposed to a lot that I probably should not have been exposed to in LA that I wasn't in Houston. Houston felt very safe. It felt like I had some sense of control of my atmosphere. And when I moved to LA, I feel like everything just, I don't know, it was kind of a mess. It felt like I had great friends and I don't know, it became very, what's the word? Almost sort of works-based for me with my family because I felt this pressure now to make my career happen.
Oh, wow.
And I'm still a high schooler. So I was trying to live life, but also trying to get an agent. And then after school, going to auditions and my mom's driving me for 2 hours to the Valley to have an audition where I have to cry. And then I didn't cry, but I cried when I got out of the audition. It was just a lot of stress. It was a lot of stress and I didn't have a relationship with God, but I really do feel like God was a part of this because I had to go to LA to uncover this mystery for myself of what this life would look like. And there was a lot of really hard family stuff we went through, but also career stuff and life stuff. And I felt like in a sense that I was a bit of a failure because I kept just failing at these auditions and I got no parts. I went from being a big fish in a small pond to a small fish in a large pond, like the smallest minuscule fish you could ever, you probably couldn't even see it. Like it felt so lonely for me as a young girl. And I think the weight of that pressure of trying to make things happen myself was something I took upon myself. And as the years went by, it just completely destroyed me. And it actually followed me into my move to Nashville, which was in 2013, because I got so burned by the LA and acting world. And I sort of lost my creative flame when I was in college. Everything was sort of it's almost like I didn't have a deep seated root of a relationship with God in Houston. I moved to LA. The enemy perverted so many different things in my life. And of course, I didn't know it at the time, but there were so many wounds that happened in LA for me. And so as a young woman in my 20s, the creative fire for me was totally burned out by the time I was a sophomore, junior in college. But sophomore year, there was an opportunity to take a songwriting class. And I was like, well, why not just try it? Why not just see? I like to play guitar. I like to sing. So let's just try it. And my flame was lit again. And it felt like such a foreign feeling to me that I was like, oh my goodness, I have to follow this. Like, I don't know if I'm going to stay in LA after college, but whatever this feeling is in this songwriting class, it is the safest I've felt in a really long time.
Huh. I think that's interesting. You use the word safe. Can you flesh that out a little bit?
Yeah. I think for songwriting, I was able to tell my story and my truth. And you know, my truth is such an interesting concept these days, but at the time it felt like a place that I could really express what I was going through versus acting, which a part is given to you and you just have to play by the rules. Mm-hmm. And for me, I wanted to talk about my stuff. I wanted to talk about what I was going through and I wanted to sing about it. It just felt like somewhere that I could just go and be by myself. I was already feeling a little bit lonely as far as the career stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, wow, I just really feel like this is my thing. I can tell my story and people are going to listen to it through song. And also music just moves my heart. I know that that is a deep, deep desire and gift that God has given me in my heart. And of course, again, did not know it at the time, but I really feel like that was God having his hand over me of like, your LA chapter is done. And you think this is probably some, your artistic flame and your artistic spirit leading you, but we'll get there. He's like, when you get to Nashville, we'll address this, honey. But for now, I need you to get to Nashville.
Well, it sounds like you're a pretty driven personality, at least in those years. I mean, to think about a 16-year-old telling your parents, I need to move, we need to, and you go, and then 6 years of going pretty hard after it. I mean, it almost sounds like burnout in a way. You know, that's a pretty driven thing. Once the songwriting thing started, did you feel that drive again toward that?
Absolutely. Yeah, I would definitely categorize, I hit burnout very early on. And I am a very passionate, hardworking person. So for me to feel burned out for the very first time being that young, mm-hmm. I didn't really categorize it as burnout. Mm-hmm. I thought I was just a failure.
Oh, wow.
And so when that flame was lit again, it felt like this is success to me. This is what I need to continue. And I remember going home once and I played a song for my mom that I had written. And she was like, you wrote that by yourself? I was like, yeah. And she was like, yeah, you should do that more. I was like, okay. I mean, it was just so funny that small little flame being lit again completely changed the trajectory of what I did with my life. Wow. And so I sort of let the acting go. I let that dream go. And that was really hard for me, but I was so over it. And so 2013 comes, I'm graduating college. And once again, it's almost like I was meeting my parents at the metaphorical table again of being like, guys, I know you let me go to LA, but here's the deal. I have to go to Nashville. Now is the time for me to go to Nashville because that's where my creative flame is and I have to chase it. And they were like, okay, totally get it. This is the creative life and we'll try and be there as much as we can for you and wow. help you get started. And they've always been supportive. I mean, my parents, for how crazy my trajectory has been for them in their life too, they had to give up so much yeah. to move as well.
Yeah.
I just commend them because they are wonderful, wonderful humans. So moved to Nashville, 2013. You know, in my mind, I was sort of assessing like, okay, so I'm moving to Nashville. There's really only a few options for me here. I'm not going to be a pop artist because I don't want to do that. I'm not going to be a Christian artist because I'm not a Christian. I guess the only thing left for me is being a country singer-songwriter. And it's not necessarily that I didn't love country music because I did, but I loved so many other things too. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I thought I just fit in the box of country. And so I really pigeonholed myself in that box because logically it just made sense. I was from Texas. I liked country music. I grew mm-hmm. up going to the rodeo. All of these kinds of things merged. And I was like, that's the business decision I'm going to make. Cool. So I start writing a bunch of songs, still not spiritual, not religious. And I start writing songs with like the word God in it. And I'm like, I'm such a fake, but it's okay because I'm just playing a role.
It's my job.
It's my job and I'm really good at playing roles. You know, I come from the acting world. I can do this. I can do this country music thing. Goodness. So I wrote a couple of decent songs and I got an agent. I started touring, went on a radio tour and it was destroying. Again, all over again. It was almost like the same thing played out all over again. I just was so angry again at myself because I had followed my artistic flame. I thought this was going to be the thing that really changed things for me. And everything was happening all over again. And even more so because 2015, 16, 17 rolls by. And then around early 2017, I start losing my voice. To me, what was going wrong was I was not living up to what I thought I could do for my career in 3 years.
Oh, wow.
I was like, I'm not signed at a label. I'm playing shows in the middle of South Dakota at a biker bar for mm-hmm. three people. Mm-hmm. And okay. I am giving my blood, sweat, and tears to this career. And it is ending up proving to be so fruitless. Mm-hmm. And I'm a failure. It always goes back to I'm a failure. This is all riding on my shoulders. There are so many people who are invested in me. Songwriters, parents, managers, all of these people trying to help me, and I'm the one who can't make it happen.
The pressure Olivia felt was suffocating that creative flame. She was exhausted from the constant drive to prove her worth. Once again, she was feeling like a failure, and this time literally losing her voice. Part two of Olivia's story is coming up, but first, a word from our sponsor, Habib Habib, founder of H-Squared Leadership Institute. Different people have different motives for becoming leaders.
Absolutely. Actually, some people are thrust into leadership even though they don't want to do it, you know, and it could get to your head or you could do the right thing. We don't train our leaders enough to tell you the truth. Most people are thrust into it before they're really ready. So some end up being arrogant without meaning it. But servant leadership is what we should be teaching. And we should be teaching it to people before they get to be leaders. So when they get to be leaders, they are prepared. But the motive of why you want to grow and what you're going to do when you get up to the top, my goal always was to keep reminding myself that my goal is to help the people around me. If I help the people around me and they succeeded, I get a great gratification out of that. That's really a biblical principle, you know. So bad motives can make a tyrant. Good motives can still sometimes, without proper training, and land you as being arrogant or do not have finesse as a leader. But with training, you can change that.
And you can find a lot of that training on your website.
Right, at HabibHabib.com.
And now part two of Olivia Lane's story.
So all of that pressure was happening all over again, but there were more stakes in the game. There were more people involved. There was more money involved. And it just crushed me. I remember getting off stage at a show in Nashville, and it was for a bunch of radio people. And that radio tour really knocked me down, because there was a lot of meetings where I would be in there, and because I'm not signed at a label, or I don't really know the reason, but it's like I wasn't there. It's mm-hmm. like I wasn't even in the room. So going through that as in your young 20s, as yeah. a woman, you're just like, I'm doing my hair every morning. I'm putting my makeup on. I'm putting on these cute dresses. I'm working hard. I'm tweeting about the shows. Like, I'm doing everything I possibly can, and it's just not enough. And I'm a failure. So all of that really added up to me starting to lose my voice, and I had to go off the road to rehab my voice. So that was an interesting conversation with all of my team. I was like, you know what? If I have to go off the road and rehab my voice, I'm just going to rehab everything. I'm going to go to therapy. I'm going to figure out why I'm so hard on myself, because this is so not sustainable at all. And this is where the Lord really, this is where it gets good. This is where he's really started to show up. And I had no idea how much God was going to use this.
You said you were so hard on yourself. Are you talking about the things that you would say in your own head to yourself, that kind of stuff?
Yes. Yeah. Being hard on myself was all mental. It was so many just mean things I would say to myself, but I thought that was normal. I thought being hard on myself was exactly what I needed to be, because that's what's going to make me successful. And I was always like that. I was always like that as a kid. And I was born with this insatiable, like, desire to be seen and to be known and to be heard. And for me to accomplish that, I just worked really hard. I worked hard at all the parts I would get and all of the shows I was in. And I think I was rewarded for that. Mm-hmm. And so that was something where I was like, oh, well, if I just do this more, I'm going to have more success.
Never enough, is
it? No, it is never enough. And I thought it was, but that's why I went to therapy. And I met this wonderful therapist, and she's actually become a very good friend and a spiritual leader for me. And she really discipled me. But she was the first person who introduced to me a spiritual life at all.
Huh.
And she said the four bubbles of a balanced human are physical, logical, emotional, and spiritual. And I was like, yeah, we can get rid of that last bubble because I'm not spiritual. So we can just ignore that and really focus on these three.
When you say I'm not spiritual, had you in your time in high school and at USC, had you gone like not just left Houston and that kind of faith behind, but did you determine there is no God? Where were you at? You know, where had you gone to?
You know, I think back on my young church days, and I even went to this summer camp, and it was Christ-centered. And I remember sitting in a circle, and the camp counselor was saying something like, you know, if you accept Jesus into your heart tonight, you know, we'll give you a Bible and your whole life will be changed. And I was so jazzed by that because I was like, I think they phrase it as like, you have a continual just like friend in God and in Jesus, like everywhere you go. And I was like, this is amazing. I want that. And I remember, again, it was almost like this performative thing, I think, where I was just like, I've accepted Jesus into my heart. Like, and I ran up to my camp counselor and she's like, that's amazing. And then I remember laying in bed that night in my camp bunk. And I remember being like, all right, God, where are you at? And it was just silent. And I remember trying to grapple with like, what? I don't understand. I think my life is supposed to change, but I don't feel any different right now. And I think that memory has always been with me because I did not have the right heart stance for me to have a relationship at that moment in my life. And I also didn't have any sort of community to where I was being discipled in the right way. Mm-hmm. And so I think, and it's kind of that whole, well, if you have a big emotional response when you're saved, like everything's going to change. And then when that emotional fire runs out, you're like, mm-hmm. wait a minute, I don't understand what this is. I don't know what's going on. Somebody told me my life would change and it's not. Mm-hmm. And this is just, this is fake. It must be fake. And so I think a couple of little moments like that, as I was growing up in the church, I was just like, well, these people are crazy. There's nothing here. I don't see any evidence. You know, I just don't see any fruit. So I'm out. And when I got to LA, everything was almost over-spiritualized. I mean, everybody had their own thing. And I was just like, you guys are all loco cuckoo bananas. There is nothing out there. I don't understand. And I got hung up on those really big questions, like if there's a good God, why would bad things happen? Uh-huh. So those were the kind of questions that I would get hung up on and I would just never question it further.
Were you like full on atheism at that point?
Yes. Okay. So by the time I got to LA, I was full on atheist. And I think it actually grew deeper when I got to Nashville.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, going through that first failure of acting was, okay, I'm young. I've got time. I can figure this out. I moved to Nashville. I found my creative flame again. Oh no, it's happening all over again and worse. Mm. So I think I just got to this bitter place of just like, well, if there is a God, you know, why would he let this happen to me? That was where that spiritual conversation ended. And it was never something I was having with my friends at the time. No one was ever challenging me to figure out my spirituality until I got to therapy.
So when you said to your therapist, I'm okay with three bubbles, we're going to go ahead and nix the fourth, what was her response?
She smiled and she said, okay. And fast forward about a year, talk about being Holy Spirit led. Oh my goodness. So we're working for about a year. I'm doing a lot of great work. I'm tackling a lot of childhood trauma type things, bad mental scripts. I realized I was being so mean to myself and I didn't have to be. I was like, all right, I am ready for more healing. And she was like, okay, well, I feel like you're in a good spot, but there is another bubble over here we haven't really talked about. And I was like, yeah, but you know, we don't really need that, right? And she's like, I think we do. And she was like, go home, think about it. But if you want more healing, you're going to have to figure out what your spiritual life is. And I was like, I really don't want to do that. There's a lot of wounding there. That's just like a lot of people get through this life and they're not spiritual and they're perfectly fine. So I went through all the logical arguments I had in my head about it. And I finally arrived at the place where I was like, I can't afford not to have as much healing as possible. So I go back into therapy and I was like, I'm ready. And she was like, okay, so here's a bunch of books. And she's like, what have you heard about spirituality? And I was like, well, to me, I feel like Christians are all the mean people on Facebook. And I don't want to get wound up in that. And she was like, interesting. And I was like, yeah. And then I was like, but I'm not really interested in any religions where I have to like be good enough to achieve anything. Like I need to give up control. And she was like, And I was like, so what are my options? She's like, well, and I was like, what do you believe? And she was like, well, I believe in Jesus.
Did you know that before that point?
How funny is this? I have no idea. And look at God. I mean, literally look at God. And actually, as a little tangent, in my vocal healing, my vocal coach was also a believer in Jesus as well.
Did you know that?
I knew that upfront about her because she's very vibrant and loud about it. And so when I would go in there, I'm like, okay, this is like a lot. And she's like, yeah, I know, but like Jesus loves you. And I was like, okay. Oh my gosh. So in hindsight, the two people that really challenged me to look inward and look deeper into a spiritual life were my therapist and my vocal teacher, which was so funny because they were the first two people I encountered on my healing journey. I mean, just look at God. I love him so much. Of course, he's working at the time. And I look back and I'm just like, whoa, I'm so glad I answered the call and I answered the pursuit. But the thing that my therapist really shepherded me on, and also my vocal coach as well, they were very rooted in their truth and they were very truthful to me about what they believed, but they never pushed the shame, the you have to believe, like this is the it's the only way or you're going to go to hell, like all of these scary Christian type sayings that I feel like I lived with for so long in my life of wow, well, if this is how people make me feel about a spiritual life, then I don't want any part of it. And I had a very limited view, of course, what Christianity was. I had a very skewed, perverted version of what Christianity was for a very long time. And also my own church stuff that I was dealing with and went through as well. So all of that was a strong enough case for me to say, well, God isn't real. But I saw all this beauty in my life of these people who were finally for my healing and loving on me and just really wanting the best for me. And they both were Christians. And I was like, wow, this is kind of rocking my world right now. Like, I feel like I haven't really experienced people who are genuinely kind of going outside the box and outside of just their normal, you know, hour-long session to make sure I'm good and I'm okay. And so my therapist gave me a bunch of books to read. And she was like, if you want to give up control, I would recommend looking into some Christianity books and reading about it and reading about what a relationship is. And I was like, hold up, what is a relationship? What are you talking about? And she was like, in Christianity, having a relationship with God is real. And, you know, she's like, I hear from him all the time and he counsels me a lot in my therapy sessions. And I was like, what? And so my mind was blown at this relationship with God situation. For a long time, we called him the G-man because I really wasn't comfortable saying God.
Oh my goodness.
Funny story. I know. It was really deep. That my case went really deep not believing. And so I started reading all these books about what it was like to have a relationship with God. And my vocal coach would take me out to lunch and she'd be like so kind and just very inquisitive of what I was going through. And as I started to undo a bunch of bad habits physically from singing and mentally, it was almost like I was creating space for my spiritual life.
Interesting. Huh.
In such a beautiful way, because I had all of this just like human, I guess, just trauma that I had built up and I had so much weight. And as I started to heal myself, I felt lighter and I felt more capable to just handle life. And wow, it isn't all about me. Maybe there is something else. Maybe there's something else out there. And I think in therapy, I got to this point where I was like, I'm just so tired of handling everything myself. Like, is there somebody I can pass things off to? I mean, is it a relationship? Is it a manager? What is it? Like, who can I rely on? And we just got to this moment where Beth was like, I mean, Olivia, Jesus. And I was like, okay, see, I logically understand that, but I need proof. I need proof that this exists, because if I'm the kind of person that if I feel a flame lit, I'm going to go all in. Mm-hmm. And I've been burned so many times having that feeling, but I'm serious. Like if this is real, I'm going to go all in. And she was like, you need to ask God to reveal himself to you. And I was like, you can do that. And she was like, of course. And she's like, the fact that we're having this conversation means that God is pursuing you. And I was like, what? What? There's this, what? What is happening?
What did you feel when you began to intellectually understand the prospect of a God that might be pursuing you?
It was the best feeling in the world because I constantly felt like I had to prove my worth to people, to society, to my music people, to my fans. And the fact that somebody already loved me and knew me and created me for a specific purpose, that was almost too much for my brain to fathom. For about 4 months, I was almost kind of developing my prayer life in a way, but I was always just like, God, are you there? Is this you? Is that your voice? Is this coincidence or is this you? And then I would have all these questions and I would come into my therapy sessions and into my vocal sessions as well. And I'd be like, so is this God? It was just a free space for me to be like trying to maneuver like what a relationship with God would look like. Mm-hmm. And I just went into this deep dive for like 4 months. My prayer every morning was, God, if you're real, please show me, reveal yourself, because I need it. Because if I'm going to do this, I'm going all in. And then also I would be reading books and I would be talking with my therapist and sending questions. And it was just such a beautiful time of discovery. I was so hungry for truth. I was trying to find out if the G-man was worthy to believe in, you know, mm-hmm. like that's really where my mind was, because mm-hmm. I was trying to disprove it. And that was about 4 months of just like digging and asking and questioning and putting myself in a stance of like being alone with God. And there were just things that would happen. Like looking back, I wrote down in those 4 months, like every day what was happening. And there would be times where I'm like, is this God or is this a coincidence? Mm-hmm. All of my notes are just so, I look back and I'm like, wow, it's just amazing to see how desperate I was. And so April 29th, 2018, I was sitting on my couch and I was actually reading this book called Walking with God by John Eldridge. It's a book that's just all about how he has a relationship with God and how God shows up for him through nature, through conversations. And I loved that book so much. And I remember reading a sentence, "We are at a world at war." And all of a sudden I started crying. I mean, it was just like a normal Sunday afternoon reading a book on the couch. And all of a sudden it was like, I started crying. I started smiling. I had this like crazy emotional hijacking that happened. Like I felt like I felt everything at the same time. And it was like scary because I thought maybe I was having like a psychotic break. I like literally had no idea what was happening. And I remember the room felt heavy. It felt really dense. And I remember looking up and I saw a shadow silhouette of Jesus with his arms outstretched. With my actual eyes, I see this, and I was terrified and thrilled and amazed and felt so loved and seen. And it felt like my prayer, obviously my prayer was answered. Like, if you are real, you have to do something grand, because if this happens and I believe, I'm going all in. And it was so funny because it felt like an eternity, but it was like a mere moment. I kind of equate it to like an earthquake. I felt a few earthquakes in LA where like you feel like you're kind of going crazy, but the ground is actually shaking. And so you go to see if anything's moving, like maybe the chandelier is still swinging and you're like, oh my goodness, that really just happened. Like that's truly what it felt like. And I immediately texted my therapist and I was like, oh my goodness, I think I'm going insane. Or I just had the greatest prayer ever answered. I'm not sure. And she's like, we'll talk about it on Monday. But she's like, you're good. Like, and so I had a session with her that week and she was like, Olivia, that was you being in the presence of the Holy Spirit for the very first time. And I was like, that exists? Like, that is a real thing. And she was like, that is a real thing. Like God answered your prayers. And I was like, I am so in. I am in. And so that was 2018. And for the last 4 years, I mean, God has just radically come into my life in the most beautiful, amazing ways. And I'm so grateful. I'm so blessed and so grateful for him just constantly pursuing me. He was working the whole time. And I look back on my life and I see these little moments that maybe where God was knocking on the door of like pursuing me. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted nothing to do with it. But now I know he used all of that to amount to where I'm at right now. Mm-hmm. And it's just mind blowing every time I sit and really think about it, how good and how abundant and how amazing our God is.
So how is your life different now? We've talked a lot about how career driven you were, even though that was like because of deeply rooted stuff in you and performing and, you know, getting the kudos and filling that bucket. So how is that different for you?
Yeah, my life now is just totally living for God's plan for my life. And I feel like I'm still, you know, I'm only 4 years into my relationship with Jesus as compared to some people who have been walking for their whole life. So I think the first year, like 2018 to 2019, was a year where I was really in this, like, I don't know, I sort of categorize it as like this training, and I'm still in it. And I think the walk with Jesus is always, you're always in training and sanctification. But really the first year I was like, what did I just sign up for? I have no idea what to do. I don't know what to study. I don't know where to go. I don't, you know, how do I advance here? What is this relationship? What is needed of me? And of course, me being the hard worker, I'm like, you know, very just like works, like give me the to-do list. I will do it and I will nail it and it will be amazing. And I've really had to learn that a lot of work happens over time. It happens on God's time, which can be sometimes fast and a lot of the time slow. But I really had to figure out what a relationship with God was now that I believed. It's so funny. I feel like the first couple of years, God really was like, it was like a, yay, I'm saved. Amazing. And then it was like, oh no, there's so much happening. You're stripping people out of my life. You're completely changing things. You're telling me to do music this way. What is happening? Like, I thought, again, it was sort of that, like, you know, I'm saved. Now everything's going to be amazing. And that just wasn't, it was like instant that God really just stripped me down, down to the foundation of like, you need to rely on me for everything. You cannot do it through your own understanding. It was actually kind of a very lonely time because I didn't really have anyone. I mean, my parents, they don't walk with the Lord. They don't have a Holy Spirit filled life, even though they're supportive of me and my new newfound relationship with Jesus, but they weren't people that I could go to. And it was almost like, you can't even go to your parents. You need to come to me.
Wow.
So it was a lot of breaking down ways that I was trying to cope with life that I needed to give to God. Slowly but surely, all the things that I started to pray for, you know, I look back on it as an amazing time because it was a time that it really was just me and God. I'm still learning every single day. And God really took people out of my life and interjected people who were believers in my life. It's been incredible to watch. I mean, everything from the people I work with, my girlfriends who are now going to be my soon bridesmaids, my future husband and his family. I mean, God is equipping me for whatever his plans are for me, but all of the people around me, even my therapist now has become almost like a spiritual mom in a sense. We're in Bible studies twice a week together. So my personal life is almost preparing me for what my career is going to look like. I know that God has given me these gifts of songwriting and music, and I'm realizing that a lot in my career, and I think it goes back to what I was talking about earlier, just feeling like the weight of the world of my career is on my shoulders and I have to get it done. There's a little bit more left that God kind of needs to get out of my system of how I work when it comes to my career. And it's so beautiful because my personal life, I feel like, is so abundant and flourishing, and God is using that to almost help me get out of my head and my career and get out of my own way in my career. He's like, hey, you need to focus over here. You need to focus on the blessings and you just need to let me work. Please get out of my way. I feel like that's just been the constant with God.
Have you switched gears? You went to Nashville thinking you were going to be in the country music realm. Has that been something that's changed as well?
Yes, it definitely has changed. And I wish I could give more of a boilerplate of what that is going to look like, but I'm in the middle of that story. Oh. So 2020, I let go of the country box thing. And I really felt God saying, you need to give me your music. And so I gave him my songwriting. I gave him my music. I surrendered that over. And he gave me beautiful gifts of songs like Women at the Well. And I just started writing more spiritually focused and centered songs about my relationship with Jesus. And as I put those songs out for the first time, I was affecting change in a way that I had never seen before because I was finally a vessel. I was a vessel for someone else. And I was not the person that I felt like I had to be for so long. Like the weight of the world on my shoulders, this is up to me. I have to make sure that my fans' hearts change because of me. Yeah. And now I was doing my art for Jesus and Jesus was doing the work. And that was such a relief for me to see and watch, especially with my song, Woman at the Well.
Can you talk about that song and just where that came from? And
absolutely. Yeah, I would definitely categorize Woman at the Well as my breakout into the Christian world because that was really the first time I was bold about singing about my faith. It took my fans probably a minute to be like, wait a minute, she's a believer now? What? And then I had a lot of fans reach out and say, I've been praying for you. And I was like, that is so crazy to know and to think that people were praying for me before I even knew it. And I remember putting that song on TikTok and it just exploded. And I was like, what is happening? This is crazy. Just all of these things. And I started getting all these followers. And then I was so passionate about talking about Jesus. And so I would put all my Jesus talks and still continue to put my Jesus talks on TikTok about how amazing he is and what he's doing in my life. And I realized that people needed that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, who am I to talk about this? And I remember going into the writing session of Woman at the Well and my two co-writers, I was just like, guys, I have never sang about Jesus. And today's the day. I think once I put that song out there, it's been such a learning lesson for me because I think I was very insecure in the beginning because I was like, who am I to put out a song about Jesus? And I've only been walking for 2 years. I think the enemy started to really pervert a lot of that stuff in my head. And it was definitely a refining period for me. And I still sometimes suffer from that imposter syndrome where I'm like, who am I? And God's like, why not you? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh yeah, you're right. You're God. Of course, I'm the vessel. It's almost like it's like breaking down those human bad patterns or where the enemy likes to prod and poke me and make me insecure. But I wrote that song. I was in a couple studies about the woman at the well, and that's what made me write the song. But once the song was out there and I was sort of going through this period, I remember hearing my song. I just kind of played it for myself just to listen to it one day. And I just broke down in tears because I was like, oh my goodness, I haven't really understood the amount of who I am in the woman at the well. Like I knew I resonated, but I feel like I explain things sometimes where I'm like, see, I logically understand that about God, but yeah. I haven't fully experienced it yet. And so I'm trying to bridge the gaps of that conviction and the rebound of like, okay, I get it, but help me believe, help me have more faith, help me. I feel like that's my constant prayer these days where I'm like, I understand, I logically get it. But in that moment of the song already being out and dealing with all of these thoughts, I just remember being like, the woman at the well didn't have a rabbinical degree. She didn't go to seminary. She literally had an encounter and she told the world, that's it. That's all she did. And in that moment, it was just like Jesus wrapping his arms around me of like, my child, you are doing what you need to be doing and let me do the rest. And so after that moment, it was almost like I've got this fire lit now of like, I just want to write songs about Jesus and let him operate through me as a vessel.
And that's what Olivia is doing. If you listen to Christian radio, you may have heard her sing on Sidewalk Prophet's latest song. It's called I Believe It Now. And you can hear the song that she talked about called Woman at the Well, along with her other music on Spotify, Amazon, iTunes. And you can join her hundreds of thousands of followers on TikTok and Instagram at Olivia Lane Music. When we recorded this interview, she was less than 1 week from her wedding day. Remember her vocal coach, who was so instrumental in Olivia coming to faith? Well, she introduced Olivia to her brother-in-law. His name is Chase, and the rest is history. So congratulations to Olivia and Chase, and huge thanks to Olivia for taking some time out of her wedding week to share her story. Well, this weekend, we're celebrating Easter and the resurrection of Jesus, the most important event in all of human history. We've produced a special podcast that I think you'll really enjoy.
On the third day, he rose again in fulfillment of the scriptures.
Experience the story of Easter through a brand new podcast called In Fulfillment.
Who is this man? Why is he on a donkey?
Hosanna to the Son of David!
You will see greater things than that.
The stone was rolled away. Jesus' body is gone.
In Fulfillment, an Easter audio drama that shares the prophecies and the real-life moments of Jesus' death, burial, and resurrection. Listen today on Apple, Google, and Spotify.
Thanks to the Unfolding team, producer Jason Rackow, Elena Nallen, and Danielle Perez, and our sponsor, Habib Habib, founder of H-Squared Leadership Institute. Find out how Habib can share inspiration and motivation at your workplace at HabibHabib.com. The Unfolding is produced by Northwestern Media, a ministry of the University of Northwestern St. Paul. We'll be back next week with another page in The Unfolding.